We're going to transition now to Jim Robb, and we're really pleased that Jim has agreed to join us. He's an agricultural economist with the Livestock Marketing Information Center. And for those of us that use it know what a marvelous resource this center is, and those of you that don't, I would really recommend you go out and find and look at the information they have there. It's one of the best sources of information around livestock markets. And Jim has been the director of the center since 1993. And he's had experience in Nebraska and UC, University of California, and Michigan State University systems. One last note about the Livestock Marketing Information Center. It began over 50 years ago. And the really neat thing about it, it's a cooperative effort. And there are 28 land-grant universities that support it, several USDA agency and associated organizations. And so Jim is going to give us a briefing here about livestock markets. The floor is yours, and thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you today. My slide presentations are sometimes known as movies. We'll go through these very quickly. The opportunity for you to revisit the slides at your own pace and for your own areas of interest is one of the real powerful things of these webinar types of efforts. So really, don't try to focus on individual aspects within the graphs. We're trying to paint a picture here. So a little bit fast and furious is the nature here. So let's go in that mode here. We want to talk about sort of the background of the livestock markets, focusing on where we're at and the recession. And I was asked to give a little bit more detail on the hog markets, the dairy markets, the cattle markets, and then kind of managing in this environment. We will end with our price forecasts. Those are not USDA's price forecasts. Those are from the LMIC, which is this cooperative effort. All the data sources are from USDA, National Ag Statistics Service, Ag Marketing Service, Foreign Ag Service, Economic Research Service. So these are very important data sources that really do provide the foundation to our ability to understand what's going on in this very dynamic market environment. So with that aggressive agenda, let's move forward and talk about the big picture and try to paint that a little bit. Matt Roberts has well described the linkages, the importance of the grain sector to the livestock sector. Obviously, for cattle, corn has been a major factor. Our cost of gain in feed yards is very high compared to where it was a few years ago. Soybeans certainly impact the hog and dairy and poultry industry much more than the cattle sector, at least on balance. As we go through these slides, the dotted lines will be last year, the blue line, the solid line will be this year, and the red line will be the prior five-year average. The point here is that these costs of gain are much higher. That does impact feeder animal prices significantly. We have, for example, calf prices well below a year ago due to the corn market. And our assessment of prices is very similar in what's embedded in our forecast to what Dr. Roberts talked about. Obviously, these corn prices have been very volatile. A year ago at this time, we had just passed through Omaha corn prices approaching $7.50 a bushel, still above a year ago, and that volatility has been a driver in the livestock sector. From a very broad perspective, a species that I'm not going to cover here but are part of my background, the broiler sector has been hit hard by these higher feedstuff costs. The broiler industry has just turned profitable in the last quarter and has lost a lot of money. So, for example, we see the number of egg sets, those are the fertilized eggs that will be hatched and grown into chickens, have been running well below a year ago in the prior five-year average. This is sort of important from the big picture perspective. Again, they are adapting to record high feedstuff costs. But the poultry industry has not posted a year-to-year decline in the United States. In other words, production has not declined from one year to the next. And it's going to do that this year. The last time that happened was 1973. So these are really unprecedented times and how the industries have reacted. And the broiler industry is very dependent on exports. If we look way over here on this part of the chart, We see that about nearly 20% of U.S. broiler production is exported. These export markets have become very important and have added really to the volatility in some sense, the upside and the downside in these markets much more than we have seen historically. Just to give a little bit more perspective on that big picture, this is the hog industry, and you have to be careful when economists do their graphs. We hide things in the subtitles that say things like percentage of production. We always change the axis to make it confusing. But here's the year-to-year decline between this year and last year in terms of the percentage of pork being exported. We were up at 20% of U.S. pork being exported last year. Significant decline driven by the H1N1 situation. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to the pork complex. So important adjustments have happened domestically and internationally. Just to give a quick preview of the same types of numbers on the beef side, this is the percentage of production that's exported in beef. These numbers are pre-BSE over here, and then we declined dramatically. We have built back up. This year we see a modest decline in our forecast in exports, and really some modest growth as we look ahead, and that's the scenario that we're working with at this point in time. So we've made great progress since the BSE era, but we actually still have a ways to go, and there are constraints to how much we can export. That has a lot to do with domestic production. So in wrapping up kind of the part of the big picture, from the production side, the supply side, and the total red meat and poultry complex, these commodities at the consumer level, certainly the chicken and the pork are competing with beef items, and there's a lot of interaction, maybe more so than there was 20 years ago. We're actually going to see some year-to-year declines, and this is this year. In terms of the total red meat and poultry production in the United States in 2009 will be below a year ago and stay rather flat as we look ahead. We're not going to get this rather clear ramping up that we've seen in recent years, again, due to the economic situation of producers, largely driven by cost of production. If we look at the overall U.S. economy, which is very important to the meat complex, this is a quarterly change. This is the last recession in the United States. This is the current period that we're in. We think that we're out of the recession today. This last number is the second quarter of this year. And really, as we come out of recession, consumers still feel pretty bad. The data this morning on consumer credit clearly shows that consumers are still feeling very, very cash poor. They're currently saving lots of money and not really spending it. So it'll be quite a while. This is economists, we talk about various shapes of recovery. This is a long, slow recovery process from a situation that is the worst recession since the Great Depression, and that has impacted consumers. You can come back to this chart should you want to see it. Just one thing to build on what Dr. Roberts said, when we've had these past oil-embedded shocks, maybe this is different, this is only two data points in time, but those recessions have lasted much longer, like this recession has, compared to most normal ones. And so this is a market that has had to adapt to that. So what does that mean sort of in the context of, for example, the beef complex? Well, as economists, we do various measures of demand. The data are not very good. But as we try to sift through what is available, we come up with indexes on the meat side of demand. Demand is a relationship that includes both per capita consumption and the price that consumers are willing to pay. This is the second quarter of this year in these estimates. And on this scale here, that number for the second quarter of this year is like 75. Well down from the Atkins diet era in terms of consumer demand, still above where we were a few years ago. In this kind of economic environment, to have consumer demand for beef falter, especially with huge amounts of pork, much of this quarter-to-quarter faltering has been largely driven by the spillover impacts on beef demand coming out of the pork complex. But certainly we can see the impacts of the recession and what's going on in the competing meats impacting negatively the demand at the consumer level for beef. And certainly this has to be reflected back into cattle prices, for example. So that's really the environment that we're working in. But more importantly, especially, and this is an example from the beef sector again, now the next two slides, just focus on the red line and the blue line. The blue line's this year, red line's last year. This is the tenderloin price at the wholesale level. And this really reflects what's going on in the restaurant industry in the United States. The restaurant industry is still contracting in the United States. Same-store sales reported for a month ago are still declining compared to a year ago in the United States restaurant industry. And we can see that the tenderloin prices, which is really driven by the white tablecloth industry, this is the highest value beef cut, are really well below a year ago. And if we look, for example, at like the chuck prices, which are very much sold in grocery stores, consumers have actually traded away from buying in restaurants in the meat complex to buying in grocery stores. This has hit the beef complex probably harder than the other species because beef is very much a center of the plate restaurant item. And so we can see that as consumers have traded down in a sense, they've traded away from restaurants and they traded towards buying their products in grocery stores, probably a trend that has some rather long-term implications in terms of buying patterns as we look ahead. Now, this is a bit of a digression, but I think really important aspect here in these meat markets. If we look at what happened this last year in terms of prices last fall, and this is the steer, hide, and offal value on a live steer per hundredweight basis, and here's the international credit crisis emerging. In a matter of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, we took $6 per hundredweight out of live steer prices, fed cattle, calves, and yearlings, due to the international credit crisis. This is the value of the hide, the offal, the internal organs, and all these items are essentially completely dependent on export markets, Asian markets, European markets, Russian markets, etc. And it really wasn't, you know, the meltdown financially that spilt over into at least the cattle complex was heavily driven not by the meat market last fall, but by this $6 per hundredweight decline in the value of the non-meat items in the beef complex. Recently, we've had some ramping back up. China has come back. This is an international economic situation, and we're seeing China, Korea, etc., starting to ramp back up. Our supplies are down, but we're still running fully $2 to $3 per hundredweight below a year ago in terms of our cattle markets due to these non-meat items. So it's been a very broad-based, and it has had a clear international tie to how prices have behaved lately. So that's sort of the background. That's very quick. Again, you can go back and look at things. I was asked to talk briefly about the hog sector. This picture up in this corner here is taken in the central square in Mexico City in the midst of the H1N1 situation down there. So let's talk a little bit about more detail about the pork complex. Again, all these complexes are interrelated. Not one for one, but certainly what goes on in the pork sector and the chicken sector compete against each other, and certainly those do interact, especially with some of our beef components. Hog prices, this is when the H1N1 situation hit. We've had very dismal hog returns. We had a collapse this summer. We've come back slightly. We've lost a lot of money in the U.S. hog complex. This is essentially now to the levels of unprecedented losses for U.S. hog producers. Certainly well below a year ago on prices, and with still rather high costs of production. And certainly a year ago, even though we had cattle or hog prices much higher than today, the high feedstuff costs essentially caused producers still to lose money at those prices. If we look at market hogs available to the marketplace, we can see that that's declined in the latest numbers, but still the number of market hogs is the second largest ever. The U.S. industry is still very productive. We get lots of pigs per litter. That's a growing number. We really haven't made much of a cutback, and we're starting from a record high base in terms of number of market hogs as we head into this adjustment process that's happening in the U.S. hog sector. Finally, the last 2 weeks, we've seen sow slaughter finally pick up above a year ago levels. A year ago, we were getting some sow herd liquidation, but look what happened earlier this year. Earlier this year, losing money, the U.S. hog industry was fundamentally not adjusting the supply of the number of breeding animals available. So we're just beginning, largely, the adjustment process in the U.S. hog industry. Feeder pig imports from Canada are well down from where they were. This clearly reflects the declining size of the Canadian hog industry, which has been a key supplier of pigs to the U.S. market. So we're having many interactions going on here. Now, with more pigs per litter, even with our forecast that the number of sows in the United States will decline, these are the quarterly forecasts. The brown bars are from the LMIC in 2011. But I think the point is, even as we decline the number of sows, we're expecting that pork production in the United States is not going to decline very much over the next few years. The productivity in this industry, we're going to need to liquidate enough sows to not only keep production steady, but try to get some type of reduction in production. Total production to get prices to where they are profitable again for the industry. Certainly lower corn prices will help, but certainly in recent times the higher soybean meal prices have not been very helpful to this industry. Now, in terms of what's happened lately after H1N1, we can see that our pork exports have declined, and really we lost export markets. And from an economist's point of view, the key is that in the second quarter of this year, pork production was down about 2% from a year ago. But given that we export so much pork, we put in front of domestic consumers about 3.3% more pork in the marketplace. So the U.S. pork industry has really suffered, largely due to the international economic conditions, especially after the international credit crisis, a huge change in exchange rates overnight, and H1N1. Okay, so that's the brief aspect of the hog sector. Now we're going to switch very quickly, take a big breath, and talk quickly about the dairy sector. Dairy sector is interacting here. Let's see where we're at there in a very real quick sense. Dairy cow numbers in the United States were up in the first quarter of this year. They're starting to decline. But look at these numbers compared to the prior five-year average. We have grown the U.S. dairy cows. We're just starting to see some of the declines. Dairy cow slaughter has started to pick up on the weekly data. We've had one dairy cow buyout program. We're in the midst of another one. We expect that we'll have another one in the fourth quarter of this year. That will have impacts on not only cull cow prices, but also probably on hog prices and other components, and we can talk about that more. But certainly that's been a component here where these sectors are very linked together, and what has to happen in the dairy cow sector or dairy sector with liquidation of cows is spilling over into our other markets. Milk production per cow was down in the first quarter of this year. BST has pulled back high grain prices. But if we look at the second quarter of this year, we've already turned the corner towards more milk production per cow, really back on the long-term trends. So that's a fundamental nature of the U.S. industry, but that has to be compensated for also in terms of declining dairy cow numbers. Now, one thing that changed dramatically here in recent years in the U.S. dairy sector has been that we became an export dairy industry, or at least in parts supported by the export markets. Dramatic growth in recent years in the dollar value of dairy product exports from the United States. We used to worry mostly in this all these years that we imported lots more dairy products than we exported. We became a net exporter of dairy products in the matter of just a couple of years. Very supportive of markets. And then what happened earlier this year, the international credit crisis, the ramping down of demand worldwide, and now we see, for example, in this market that exports are essentially half of what they were a year ago. So we've lost an export market. We had increasing number of cows, increasing production, and we also have a weak demand both in the export and domestic markets. Perfect recipe for lower prices and disaster in the dairy industry. That's exactly what happened. At this time last year, we were talking $20 milk prices. Now we're talking $11 Class 3 milk prices due to this coming together of those events. We can see that cheese prices, for example, which are, you know, Foley cheese prices compared to last summer are down by $1 per pound, or cut in half compared to where they were this summer compared to last summer. That is clearly spilt over into milk prices. Butter prices, as the international market collapsed last year, butter prices collapsed, pulling down, and we can see that our butter prices are well down. So the economics of this industry have clearly come together, and we're in the midst now of a liquidation phase. Okay, take one more breath, and we only have one more major species to go through, and that's the cattle sector. Fed cattle prices, the blue line, are clearly below a year ago. We had record high prices last summer, a very unusual event. Only about 1 year out of every 25 do fed cattle prices peak out in the summertime. Likely this year they will peak out in the fourth quarter, but it's a struggling market. It's a market that's being held back largely by the pork complex and consumer demand, both domestic and foreign, and also demand for these byproducts. Still, the demand for hides to go on car seats, leather goods, demand for internal organs, which are mostly sold overseas, demand for tallows and greases that people cook with in other countries are all off, and that's a whole other demand component that is much weaker than a year ago that the market is struggling with in terms of cattle prices. In terms of 7 to 8 weight steer prices, these are the southern plains. This year we're well below last year. Probably the peaking has happened here. Here's the international collapse that happened last year, and we can see how that directly fed back into cattle prices. One thing as we look ahead down the road, the transition of higher feedstuff costs, etc., is causing more and more animals to be held to these heavier weights before they enter feed yards. So as we look ahead over the next several years, probably this seasonal peak gets pulled back earlier, maybe more so like this year as we look ahead, and we're just going to have a lot more cattle coming to market at these weights in this time frame than we probably have seen historically. In terms of calf prices, 5 to 6 weight steer calves in the southern plains, those prices are depressed. But as we think as we get into the fourth quarter, those prices will be above a year ago. And some of the worst news is probably behind the market. As Dr. Roberts talked about, corn prices are probably headed for lower rather than higher. Certainly we have wheat pasture conditions that look like some of the best potential in maybe 20 years. Some of the demand for these calves could actually finally strengthen a little bit late in the fourth quarter compared to the pattern of recent years. But certainly a very volatile market. And one that even this year has been highly volatile, and that may be more of the nature to come. This one I'm going to slow down just a little bit on. I know that's hard for some of you to believe, but let's slow down just a little bit and focus on the very difficult to see here green line, which is weekly whole muscle beef cuts to South Korea. And here is when we really started to ramp up. The Koreans started to take our product, and in a matter of 3 to 4 weeks, we were fully back to the levels that we had pre-BSE. Then, almost right on cue, the international credit crisis and financial crunch hits, and our exports weekly drop, and in 3 to 4 weeks, we've cut those exports dramatically. Our exports to Mexico went from this level to this level in a matter of 2 weeks. Exports to other countries also declined. So we can see some of the reasons why cattle prices declined last fall. And the recovery here has really been one of stabilization rather than a lot of recovery in our export markets. So our beef exports, as we forecast ahead, which will be a component, we see them down this year, up a little bit the next couple of years, but really the supply in the domestic sense constraining those to grow back to where they were. Our imports are down from where they were a few years ago. Imports this year are up, most of that product coming from Australia, most of that product going into the manufactured beef items due to exchange rates and the drought in Australia. But again, as we look ahead, those numbers we don't see getting back to where they were just a few years ago. So in terms of domestic supply that the consumer sees, either through manufactured products like hot dogs, et cetera, or whatever, isn't going to grow a lot from these levels. This slide here is too busy for you to really want to look at in any great detail, but it's to make a point. The point is that the Canadian cow herd is declining, the Mexican cow herd is declining, the South American three key country cow herd, Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay is declining. The Australian cow herd is declining. The European cow herd is declining. It's a worldwide phenomena of tightening cattle numbers is what we're in the midst of. And this has largely been driven by economic conditions and feed grain costs. Now, in terms of the U.S., we have to talk about where we are in the U.S. cyclical aspects. The bars here on this next slide are the U.S., our estimates at the LMIC, Southern Plains, returns over cash costs plus pasture rent. Very good a few years ago. This last year, 2008, was the first time in 10 years that we had many cow-calf producers in the United States did not cover their cash costs of production. What happens in that situation? We tend to try to sell enough animals to meet our cash obligations, whether that be extra cows or extra heifers. Another thing to note from this slide is that the cattle inventory in the U.S. goes up and down, but it doesn't go up and down like it used to. The cattle inventory is still an aspect of the industry, but certainly not the dominant influence that maybe it was in the last couple cattle cycles, and certainly nothing like cattle cycles of the 1980s and 1990s. Certainly those animals carry a lot of weight in terms of when we translate those cows into calves into beef production. We do that at very high carcass weight, so a few head of cows can make a big difference in tonnage in the marketplace, but it's not the old days. We don't want to assume in the industries that old-time psychologic in terms of management will do us very good stead as we look ahead. And this year we're looking for, our preliminary estimates are essentially break even in cow-calf country. The calf crop in the United States is shrinking. That was a pretty fast slide. The next slide here is really important. The number of heifers held as beef cow replacements is reported to by producers to USDA's National Ag Statistics Service shows that down 2.2% from a year ago. The number of heifers at this level does not provide any fundamental potential for growth in the U.S. beef cow herd. So the U.S. beef cow herd really can't grow until probably sometime after 2011, maybe after 2012. So we're really looking at tightening numbers ahead in the United States in terms of our overall breeding stock is already built into the system. How does that translate into beef production? As we make more and more animals enter feed yards at yearling weights, we're going to see production pretty flat in first quarters, big year-to-year declines in the second quarter, flat in the third. So we're making a transition into the industry of when beef will tend to be produced. And if I had to bet as an economist, the peaks in cattle prices on a fed cattle basis will be in the second and fourth quarters of the year. Returns to cattle feeders are still negative. One reason lower corn prices have not yet translated into higher calf and yearling prices is that feedlots are just starting to get to break even after a record long series of losing money. Corn prices will usually help calf prices, but not in an environment where you're losing record amount of money in the cattle feeding sector. So overall, we expect cattle prices to increase over the next few years on fed cattle, on 7 to 8 weight steers, on in calves, not back to record levels. Depends on corn prices. To make record levels, we're going to need to see much cheaper corn than we have recently. But fed cattle prices by 2011 should be reapproaching record high levels. In terms of managing in these times, we need to understand that we're in a demand problem. It's going to be a slow recovery. We think volatility continues in these livestock marketplaces. This is a specific example for cattle, but it applies to most species. Volatility and shocks will continue. We had a shock in the livestock markets after 9/11. We had a shock in the cattle market after BSE. We had a shock in the cattle market after the credit crisis. Those shocks, we've already had 3 this decade. I suspect that shocks will also continue. Grain prices will continue to be a key driver, especially of what feeder animal prices will be and the profitability of our livestock sector. In terms of cattle producers, we need to think in terms of moving away from the long-term logic of managing by cattle cycles and managing and not necessarily changing our operation, but be willing to understand and deal with these shorter-term phenomena as the drivers in terms of prices rather than long-term cyclical aspects. We think it's important for producers to increasingly know how their cattle will perform in the next stage of production. If you don't know how your cattle perform for the people that buy them, it's going to be increasingly difficult in a volatile and shock-driven marketplace to be able to sell those at the higher end of the price range. Near-term calf and yearling prices will follow fed cattle prices. Fed cattle prices will need to get stronger to pull those higher. We think as we look ahead, managing culled cows for profit will be increasingly important. Again, we expect another dairy herd buyout yet this fall. That could put pressure into that market. But as we look long-term ahead, culled cows a year from now will probably be much more valuable than they are today. And we think it's also important for producers right now to be planning for higher prices and higher costs of production in 2010 and 2011. The next 3 slides are you can look at it at your leisure. They are our forecasts of quarterly hog prices. Our quarterly forecasts from a fundamental perspective are a little bit lower than the futures are today. On dairy prices, a similar story. Our prices are a little bit lower than the futures are today, largely because the industry has not cut back on milk per cow, et cetera, and we really haven't cut very many dairy cows out of the system as we have a large number of heifers behind these cows that are being liquidated. In terms of cattle prices, though, our price forecasts are slightly higher than what the futures market are suggesting. Please take those price forecasts with a grain of salt. Those are clearly trying to get a fundamental understanding of what's going on in the marketplace and need not actually reflect what prices will be. A year ago at this time, we talked in terms of the dairy segment, hog segment, and cattle segment, that the futures markets look consistently too high, but we didn't realize how too high they were. So with that, thank you very much, and I know that was fast, but at your leisure, please feel free to go back and page through those at a more appropriate pace.
Jim, thank you for presenting a lot of information in a very understandable way. We do have a question from one of our audience members, which we're asking you to shift a little out of the forecasting, looking ahead business, which you've done really well. But this individual asks, what risk management strategies would you recommend for cow-calf producers for the next 2 years?
Well, I think largely from cow-calf producers, it's back to the basics. It's back to understanding that costs of production are important. I think it's back to understanding that in many areas of the U.S., we need to have a buffer in terms of our forage supplies. We need to understand that market risks are going to be there. And so we need to think in terms of, when am I going to sell the animals? If we do, for example, see corn prices a year from now skyrocket again on a short corn crop, then we need to understand how prices have behaved historically and how we manage for that. I think there are some tools out there for the cow-calf sector in the LRP products from the Risk Management Agency and crop insurance that are pretty good tools for some livestock operations that really don't require some of the intensity of marketing that we have, for example, in the futures market. But I think it's very much in cow-calf country back to the basics. It's back to managing, looking at my breeding programs, trying to get very productive animals into my herd. I think that's the fundamentals, especially in cow-calf country, as we look ahead. You know, sharp pencil, back to the basics, is really a key part of our risk management at that production level. Feedlots, hog operations, dairies, I think there certainly are some other things to look at in if we transition to those.
You did mention briefly some about what dairy liquidations, the impact they might have in the other livestock market sectors. Can you elaborate just a little on that? And what is it going to have more meaning? What do you see coming out of the dairy liquidations?
Well, we do expect another round of a CWT industry-led dairy cow liquidation program, probably yet announced this year. So certainly that does provide some potential additional pressure to cull beef cow prices in the fourth quarter, which is when they tend to be lowest. That's when we cull most of our beef cows. But there's clearly spillover across the front, and we talk about other species. As we have increased cow beef production, the type of beef that comes from cull cows, that very much competes in the pork complex, especially in the sausage markets and the manufactured meat markets. And so a lot of the blending in the industry has really been disrupted by these very low pork prices and then beef prices going up and down. All the people that make sausages and hot dogs and Lunchables and all these manufactured food items really are using largely products that come from sows and cows and the lower value parts of the chicken. And so there is a lot of interaction here that will spill over out of this dairy cow slaughter, not only just directly to the cull cow market, which will be under pressure and is certainly something to watch for, but we see some negative spillover that's happened in the pork and poultry complex also due to the necessary dairy cow liquidation. We have to liquidate enough dairy cows probably on a year-to-year basis. By January of this year, we need to see about 300,000 head less dairy cows than a year ago to even have a chance to bring milk prices up to break even for most U.S. dairy operations. And break even is not making money. That's just the beginning. So we still have a ways to go in necessary dairy cow liquidation and the potential spillovers.